Hi, I'm Clemmie Telford and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. Coats are such a personal choice, aren't they? And M&S, who are the sponsors of this podcast, have something for everyone. Me? I go for a trench coat when I want to look professional and a puffer day to day. There's no chance of me getting chilly on my commute or standing at the playground. I've also discovered in researching this that M&S makes something called a car coat, which may well be something I need to add to my collection. Today I am joined by paralysed father of two, Ben Tandley, or Tano, is that how you...
Yeah, most of my friends call me Tano.
I will go to say that in an Australian accent though. Say it in a Norfolk accent.
Tano.
No, it doesn't go. You haven't got a very strong Norfolk accent.
Do you know, I get, everybody says to me, if I come to London, they go, where are you from? I say, Norfolk. Yeah, but where are you from originally? And they go, oh, you sound Australian.
Do they? So, yeah, is it that intonation?
I don't know.
But Ben's come a long way. He's come all the way from Norfolk, which is when you're like me and you live in southeast London, you think coming to town is a bit of a trauma. I'm really grateful.
And it probably takes you as long to get across London as it does me to get from Norfolk.
It's brutal. I did avoid going on the tube, though. It's too hot for the tube. Anyway, the name of this podcast is Honestly, and I like to get us in the mood by asking some quick fire questions.
Okay.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
6.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how nice are you?
9.
Good. Back yourself. On a scale of 1 to 10, how strong are you?
10.
Yes. Night owl or early bird?
Night owl, but trying to change to an early bird. I'm getting up early and going to the gym, so...
You've got children, mind you, your children are out of that kind
My
of...
My children don't live with me, so I have them weekends.
And also, I'm hoping, how old are they?
They are 13 and 11.
Oh, tell me they don't get up early, won't
they
you?
They don't get up too early, no.
That's got to change, you're talking about that.
There's hope.
Dog or cat person?
Both. I have two dogs, but I don't mind cats as well. Can I answer both?
Yeah, you can. You can. As long as you prioritise dog, that's what the answer I wanted. Dog. Introvert or extrovert?
Extrovert.
What star sign are you?
Gemini.
Interesting. When did you last cry?
2 days after my accident. Probably the only time I've cried in my adult life.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. When did you last weigh yourself?
Friday.
When did you last go to the dentist?
A couple of months ago.
That's a good answer, you know. That's leagues ahead of what most people are answering.
Okay.
Have you ever wet yourself as an adult?
Since being paralysed lots.
Really?
Yes.
We can talk more about that. How did you do in your GCSEs and has it impacted your life?
Very well, actually. But has it impacted my life? No, not really.
This is the point. Yeah. It feels such a big deal. And then basically I've never been asked, probably since that moment.
I'd passed and nobody's asked to see them.
Isn't it?
And I've done quite well in life. Yeah. So, yeah, nobody did. It's crazy.
Where are you happiest?
With my children.
What are you most afraid of?
Spiders.
Are you?
I don't like spiders.
That's very common, though.
It's strange. If my hands are dirty, I'll pick them up. But if I'm clean, can't touch them.
What?
Yeah, strange.
What's that mean, then?
I don't know. I'll have to Google it and see what comes. But yeah, if I'm dirty and I've been in the garden or anything like that, and there's a spider, I can pick it up and I can move it.
But if you like, you came out of the shower and there's one.
I can't touch him. Yeah, horrible.
I'm trying to figure out what that means. I don't have the answer. Biggest regret?
I don't tend to have any regrets, really. I kind of live my life as I want. But saying that, probably I wish, if anything, now since being here, like I said to you, I probably wish I'd have had a stint of moving to London and maybe had a year or two living here. But never was in the position to do that. But I think now I'm definitely not. Well, I'm not. It's a bit harder. Probably, yeah, I'd like to have done that.
Does it feel really like an impossible thing once you're in the city?
Getting through the city is hard, yeah. It's just the amount of people. Mm. And I tell you what's the worst, people on their phones.
Not looking.
They're just looking and, you know, they don't bump into you, but they just don't see you and I'm going around them. So probably that. I'd like, you know, I had children young as well, but probably, if anything, travelling or just going somewhere for being a bit of a free spirit for a couple of years.
Well, you're still young though, really.
Oh, yeah, 21.
Yeah, I've just seen, you're what, 34?
34, yeah.
Yeah, but like you hit your mid-30s, definitely you feel not that young anymore.
It's good. I'm getting grey hairs now, so yeah, it's coming
out the other side soon, hopefully. Three words your friends would use to describe you.
Honest, friendly, maybe nice. Does that count? Like, yeah. Friendly and nice the same?
Yeah. They're nice.
They probably would be completely opposite to that, as you asked.
Would your friends listen to this and actually
horrible.
Laugh?
Yes, right.
Well, let's hope that that's what they'd say.
I'm selling myself here.
Yeah, that's good. So the reason I have you here is to have an honest, open conversation about disability. First of all, does that even feel alien to you? Do you feel like you associate with that language?
No, not really. I mean, it's still only new for me as well, but... you know, I haven't seen any difference in myself. I think that was something I set myself when I was in hospital. I wasn't going to change. So, and I accepted it from day one. So
for context, can you explain a little bit about how you come to be paralysed?
So the motorbike accident. I was coming home one day. We went out for a bit of a family trip out. My girlfriend at the time rides a motorbike as well. So she had my daughter on the back, and I had my son. Actually, I should have actually had my daughter on back that morning, but I always tell the story because I live my life, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, definitely.
And the plan was, because my daughter had never been on a motorbike before, she was going to come with her dad because she'd feel safer with her dad, so that was fine. But I woke up that morning and I said to my partner, I said, Kate, her phone's not meant to be on the back of the motorbike with me today.
And well, she said,
she said, well, I said, I don't know. Someone's just telling me she's not. But I said, she wants to go on the bike with her dad first. So I took her around the block a couple of times, so she'd been with me and was kind of used to it. Mm. And then obviously that happened on the way home. So
is she the younger of the two?
She's the younger of the two and half the size of Jude.
Yeah, so the accident.
If she was on the back, you know, that could have been real bad.
But it's crazy that the accident could be so bad for you. But was he injured?
He bounced a lot better than I did. Yeah. So he had a few cuts and bruises,
but nothing major.
Had a couple of days in hospital. The kids adjusted really, really well. But we have, because I split up with a mum quite young, we've always done everything as a three. And we are as a three, we're quite a solid little group. And in his eyes, Dad was always, I was quite athletic, I could do anything. So to then see me do that was a little bit of a knockback
for
shock. Him. But in the flip side, it's kind of, they've learned more about life now, seeing me actually still be the same person
after
it. So it's not a bad thing.
And in the immediate moment after that, were you conscious that when... Did you think to yourself straight away, fuck, this is bad?
Well, I knew, I kind of... Because you have this, you build a picture up in your head of what happens. Yeah. And I was kind of close, and I actually met the lady who was first at the scene. I took her for dinner when I came out of hospital and said, thank you. So I was speaking to her, and you kind of get to learn out a bit more. But I can remember laying there, and I kept saying to the lady, can you please uncross my legs? And she said, oh, your legs aren't crossed. I said, they are. She said, no, they're definitely not crossed. And I said, I've broken my back. And she didn't reply. She said, oh, I don't know. And after that, speaking to her, she said, I kind of thought you had. She was a paramedic or something like that. So she had knowledge. She said, I just didn't want her to answer that.
No, didn't want to be there.
And I think I replied to her, I said, oh, well, I've had better Sundays than this. And kind of
laughed
about
it. So still joking even in that?
I don't know why.
Also like adrenaline and, yeah, you can't.
I think so. You just, your body goes into survival mode straight away. Yeah.
And then how... soon after that, were you told officially that you were paralysed?
No, it wasn't straight after. I can remember kind of waking up. The first few days were a bit blurry, in and out of consciousness. And then when you had your operation, you're into your room and certain people come in, and I kept asking certain questions but never getting a full answer. And I can remember answering them saying, look, you know, am I going to walk? But they have to have the right person tell you that. I think they have to be trained to deliver it in the right way. So I cherry-picked information from all of them and made my own
scenario.
So I kind of said to my parents and my brothers, and I said, look, they're going to tell me I'm not going to walk. And he said, oh, you don't know that. I said, I do. I've Googled it. I just know.
Mm.
And then the surgeon who had operated on me, she went on holiday the day after for 2 weeks. Mm. So when she came back to check on me, she actually then delivered the news to everybody,
so by that point it's probably more of a shock to everyone else than
it was. Well, my brother cried, my dad kind of got upset, and I was just like, oh, you see, I told you. I mean, there was a realization when she said
there?
It I kind of accepted that was all of a sudden, like, to hear it I thought, oh yeah, that's right. But
how do they break it to you, just that you're never going to walk again.
So she said to me, look, you know, I'm ever so sorry, she said, but you're never going to walk again. And I said, well, how do you know that?
Based on what?
And she said, well, you know, your level of injury and severity, she said, you hadn't just broken your backbone. She said, that almost exploded. You know, that's very highly unlikely. And I said to her, that says, well, you've gone from never going to walk to highly unlikely in the space of 5 minutes.
Yeah, but if we continue that shift.
So there is hope. And she said, well, that's the right attitude to have towards it. And that was it, yeah.
And you've said online, because I've been doing lots of research, that you really have had very few down days off the back of that. Is that you as a person generally?
I never have. I've never been one to regret things or look backwards. I'm always kind of, I think something, I do it. And I've just always driven to go forward. I don't look back. Even when sort of starting my business and things like that, there's looking back at the stage where I thought, you know, this, how am I going to make this happen? But I just never, ever once thought of it failing or anything. I just
keep going.
I think it's self-belief. Yeah. I'm happy in myself.
You shared a quote, and I don't know if it's yours or you'd found it, but you may not be able to control everything that happens to you, but you can control your attitude towards it and how you deal with it. And that's exactly it, isn't it?
Yes, right. I often speak to people now and I say, you know, they're saying, oh, this is happening, I can't do this. But I said, it's just the way you're looking at it. I think it's that like half glass full, half glass empty kind of scenario. And I've always been one to, I think early on, certain things happen in your life and I realised that, you know, I can remember standing at a funeral, I've always been positive, but I can remember sitting at a funeral one day and I've always said, something good always comes from something bad.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just a simple thing like, so there was a family, two brothers, hadn't spoken for years and years and years, their sister died. And then I can remember sitting there and watching them talk at the bar.
Yeah, and
I'm straight away, like, you know, I thought, well, there's some good straight away come from that.
Just
and,
in that instant.
And since things like that, I stand back, I look, and I think I try find the positives, you know, and something probably might not even be related to it, but if I can link it to it, then it makes it work, yeah. So that's how I deal with things.
And so where are you at in the journey now? So your accident was 18 months ago, and then how long were you in hospital for?
So I had 3 months in total in hospital. So I had 6 weeks at Adam Brooks, and then they sort of said, you need to go to Sheffield, which is a rehab centre, which they get you independent to go home. And they said, you're there for about a minimum of 3 months, but it's work-based. So if you kind of get yourself independent fairly soon,
then you can come home. Right,
so I was like, right, yeah.
On.
So I got in there, and after about 2 weeks, they every Friday you had a meeting with all your physios, your specialists. And they sort of said to me, right, you're almost ready to go home, Ben.
Like, what?
But they said to me, oh, I hope you don't mind, but you're so positive and good to have on the ward. He said, you're bringing everybody else along. He said, do you mind staying here for the full 3 months? And I said, well, look, I'd always set myself a goal to be out for Christmas for the kids.
Yeah.
I said, so I'll stay in up until Christmas. So I'd done 8 weeks in total there, which done a total of like 3 months in that.
That's so remarkable. It's such a credit to you.
Yeah.
How was meeting other people? Were people there for a variety of reasons, or all of them had accidents?
No. Do you know, I kind of thought I was going to go there and everybody would be motorbikes or cars, but there was probably two of us which were motorbikes. Everyone else was like infection. Like one, he's quite a friend now as well, he'd got meningitis that attacked his spinal cord, left him paralysed. Another man, he was in his sort of 60s, but one of his arteries had come undetached and then attached to his spinal cord and filled it with blood.
So just
loads of different random things, yeah.
And all of them things that you couldn't predict?
None. No, there was even a surgeon in, he was a spinal specialist.
No way.
Been driving to work, a lorry hit him and he was paralysed. Yeah, and he was a spinal specialist.
Oh, the irony of it.
Yeah, and he was paralysed from his neck down. So he was staring his wheelchair with his chin.
No way.
But you see things like that and you just straight away think, there's always somebody worse. Yeah, yeah.
So then from there you then go home. Now that must be a weird thing, because I'm assuming from the day you went out that morning to do whatever you're doing, and then you came back and you never went home, did you?
Well, no. So actually, I got to Sheffield, and you're meant to be there, everything. But I was so adamant of getting myself off different medications and being independent. Actually, I got independent so quick, I used to say to the kids, come up on a Friday and we'll get a hotel. So I check myself out for the weekends, and I might come home for a weekend. So I'd never really had that long stint. But actually, when it came to the time and they was like, right, you're going home next week, there was 2 or 3 days where I was kind of a bit quiet, wasn't myself, and I kind of couldn't work out why.
Yeah.
But I think that's because I didn't have that I had, all of a sudden I thought, right, I'm home. I haven't got that safety net of coming back. So it just took a little bit of adjusting, and the first few days of being home was a little bit different.
And I'm assuming that your house wasn't necessarily set up for living with a wheelchair.
Well, previous to the accident, I'd just brought a new house. So we'd got rid of our old house. We'd brought a new house, and the sale was going through. It was about 2 weeks away from completion. And we brought it from an old couple, and they was lovely, and they sold me the house because they liked me, and and I promised them I wouldn't pull out. So I kept saying, look, this house is just the completely wrong house. I can't live in it. I felt so bad.
To the old people.
So I called I think it was one of the first people I called, and just said, look, I've been paralysed. I need to pull out the house, but I feel so bad. And in the end, I found them another buyer. So
did
they
you?
Took it over and took it.
I mean,
so
I'm
they
sure
still
they
had
would
the
have
sale.
Let you off
the hook. That's what they said. But I felt bad about it.
Of all the reasons people pull out of house buying.
That's quite a good one.
So you end up staying in your.
So I was homeless.
Original.
Yeah. So when we came out.
Oh, so you'd sold your.
Yeah, the house gone, got rid of that. So technically, I had nowhere to come out to. But my girlfriend's parents had a downstairs shower room, so they converted the living room. So I moved into that for probably 3-4 months.
Yeah. So are you still there now? Are you?
No, I brought a new house since then, so I've got a bungalow.
So have you modified it much?
Yeah, little bits. There's still bits to do. It's not perfect, but you kind of get by.
And your car, did you have to?
Had that modified. It's on like a hand control. So you can modify any car, but anybody else can still get in it and drive.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a real simple thing. It costs £500.
Really?
And you literally, it's a lever. You push it and that pushes the pedal down. And then so if you push the lever, it pushes the brake pedal down. Just a bar.
Oh, really?
And then if you pull it, it pulls the throttle.
You would think it's going to be this super complicated thing.
I did. Yeah, I thought it was going to come out. It would have to be this high-tech thing. It's not. It's just as simple as that. Yeah, £500.
That must feel amazing to get behind the wheel, does it?
Well, they tell you have to come out, go on a course, learn how to do it. I said, do you have to go on the course? They was like, no. I said, well,
not
no. So I think I came out of hospital on a Friday and I was driving on the Monday.
And then you just like that sense of independence.
Yeah, it was nice to get in the car and I took myself to physio. But I can remember we all got the car, we come out and obviously you're driving with your hands. So I pulled the lever and nearly shot back through the seats because that's quite responsive.
Yeah.
Come to the first corner, went to brake, nearly went through the windscreen.
Were you
like,
on your own?
No, I was with Kate. So it took a couple of corners to get used to it.
It's like being a learner
yes,
again.
Right. Yeah.
Here's something I've learned as an adult. It's best to get your winter coat early in the season. That way you maximise your cost per use. And definitely check out our partners M&S for their functional and contemporary outwear that will keep you warm all winter and for many winters afterwards too. What was your job? What is your job?
So I own a gym.
Yeah,
I had a gym before. Had it for about 7 years now. So that was kind of...
And do you think that's helped you, that you had faith in your body for being in good condition before your accident?
I think definitely being physically fit before has helped with the recovery, just in terms of having that upper body strength and things like that. So I've been lucky like that. But I think the biggest thing for recovery is that being positive. I think, you know, when I explain it to people, I say, well, you know, you see people who have breakups or they're going through stressful times, they drop loads of weight. It's because it's their body's response to how they're thinking. And I think because I've been so positive, that's allowed my body to... repair
in itself.
I haven't had that time of it not being in the mood to repair. So that's been the biggest thing for my recovery.
And you do obviously still train a lot.
I've always do. I mean, within
so you're benching your daughter.
That's right. Just try to keep it different.
And I also watched the clip of Josh and you're doing something and then he beat you, and I was laughing because you were like, oh, the least he could do is let me win. And then I was like, do you mean that actually you're really glad that he like went for it properly?
It's always competition with him.
So to say a bit more about Josh, it's Josh Paston, and your accident has had a massive shift in his life, I think. You're right in saying.
Well, in the morning we actually travelled to see, it was Josh's birthday, and we've been friends for a number of years, and I actually never met his daughter, so we drove to go see India in the morning. So we met them and then we sort of had a morning there, and then we went on and Josh came back to London.
So for him, he'd like been within
hours
of seeing
still
you.
I got a photo of us just before the accident.
Probably the last photo,
Last photo of me probably standing, But, you know, it's just it was a shock to him at first, but it's kind of led to him doing different stuff. Yeah,
so you've done the Berlin Marathon together, haven't you?
We've done that. That was quite impressive. Yeah,
I can't even imagine. But you were saying for that Josh trained and you didn't because you wanted to do it to prove your mental ability.
I think when I was in hospital, at first it was always about keeping the kids happy, showing them Dad hadn't given up, and just, I mean, I've taught them a lot about life. You know, life is constantly full of hiccups and stuff. So to actually show them now that this has happened and Dad's still going to achieve things and do things. So that was always my main goal. But then as it went on, obviously Josh put a nice post on Instagram, which led to me getting quite a big following. And I was getting so many messages from people with mental health, people who had lost siblings, and just was saying, look, you're actually watching you be so positive for the kids and everything is pulling me through this. And I actually even had a man turn up out the blue. He traveled 4 hours just to say thanks for being an inspiration and helping him through his times. And it wasn't until he came, I thought, cool, people are pulling positivity from this.
And do you
this.
Feel that as a weight of responsibility, or you feel it as it lifts you up with a mom?
It helped me through. I think people were saying I'm helping them, but it was actually pulling me through as well, which is great. But then it kind of stemmed to that. I thought, right, well, I want to show these people that I'm going to come out of hospital on the Friday and I want to do a marathon on the Monday just to say, look, no training straight out.
That was the time for?
No, it wasn't. I think I'd come out and done a 10K within sort of three or four days. Yeah. Broke me. Yeah. And I was very sore for a couple of weeks. But that was just to prove to the kids that, you know, I'm still the same.
Your hands have to get tough. Like, you know, if you're
everything kind of gets used. But your body it's just amazing how it heals and adapts.
Yeah.
Even when things don't work, you can see it trying to compensate in a different way. It's an amazing tool. Obviously, I'm up now and I can stand a little bit. Obviously, Tommy, I'm kind of like a toddler now. I can clamber around things.
Clinging onto stuff.
But you can just see your body is trying to help in different ways. Like, if I can't lift that leg a bit, your body you'll naturally lean to try and get that height. It's just an amazing tool.
Obviously, in your heyday, you were in great shape, and that was obviously, it's a lot about appearances.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen some photos from back in the day. And how has that shift, you know, training for appearances versus training for...
I think for me, that was the biggest thing to kind of get over, having now this kind of bloat and belly because you've got no core.
You can't use your...
But actually, when I look at it now, I mean, I think I always done those diets because people said I wouldn't be able to. That was kind of proving a point. That was just, that's how I am.
It's a bit of thread here, isn't it?
Yeah. So I'd done these diets, but actually looking back, I had such, after doing those and getting so lean, I had such an unhealthy relationship with food and my image. I would eat loads of junk food through the weekend and I'd feel like I've got to starve myself because unless I had abs, I didn't feel I was in shape and this object people wanted you to be. And looking back now, you know, people don't bat an eyelid at me having a belly or anything like that. Like, if you're there smiling and being this positive lad, that they see through that. And it's took me this accident to actually get out, break that cycle.
Yeah.
And it is just...
And also just have a bit of respect for your body. I mean,
you put it through things like it just shouldn't, you shouldn't be that lean. And I, you know, looking back, I there was days I was unhappy, grumpy, you know.
Because you're hungry.
Yeah, just a body thing. And honestly, there's I've learned so much more about being happy. I mean, I've always been happy.
Yeah.
But looking back now, what I thought was good wasn't. And there's a lot more to it.
I always asked Instagram about the topic that I'm going to be talking to you about. So I asked some questions. You already know this because you've seen them.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting to hear the results. So I asked if any of my followers had a disability, and 7% did. And if they used a wheelchair, and only 1% of my followers. So
that's probably me. I answered that, yeah. I clicked yes.
And I asked people what their biggest frustrations were. Lots of people talked about the frustration of invisible disabilities, which is something I'll come back to. Finance. So,
it's extremely expensive. Yeah, everything is.
Really?
Yeah. And some things are...
How do you get a wheelchair even? You get one on...
They will fund you a kind of relatively cheap chair through the government, which... I couldn't have used it. That, you know, it'd have been broke after a month. Or if you don't accept the wheelchair, then different counties give you a voucher. But the money changes. So I think Norfolk, I got £1,200 towards my wheelchair. Whereas I was speaking to another little kid a few months ago, he'd saved all year to buy his new wheelchair. He got £200 worth of voucher. And I just can't see why there's such a...
postcode lottery.
Yeah.
The other things that people on the Instagram said, frustrated with the lack of access, frustrated with people parking in disabled parking spots. Speaking of which, you've really tested the limits today. You've parked right in the middle of Soho, hoping that it works.
Yeah,
we'll soon find out.
Yeah,
frustrated with people not understanding the fatigue involved, people assuming that having a disability means you aren't ambitious, and people speaking to the person pushing the chair rather than you.
I've seen that a lot. Yeah,
have you?
Yeah, and the wheelchair, the parking space one, I thought would never get me, but. But if you'd done a poll on your thing and asked, because I've done a similar thing on mine, why are the disabled spots where they are? I bet 90% or 80% would think that because they're closer to the door. But it's not, and I must admit, I probably thought that before I was in a wheelchair. Yeah. But actually, you see the meter gap between the parking spots.
Yeah.
That's because you need to pull the door full open to set your chair up. And I never thought that. I generally thought that was probably because it was closer. People don't understand that. So they do park in these spots and think that thing, the attitude. But you do never, I mean, I get loads of looks because I don't know whether it's because I'm a young lad, or I pull up and they think, oh, you shouldn't be parked there. And then when you get out and you set your wheelchair up, they're like, oh, hang on. But there is lots of disabilities what you can't see.
Mm.
But I do think there should be a system or some wheelchair only bays, because I kind of look at some people, I know there is hidden disabilities, but I think if you can get in and out your car normally,
then
you could probably take a new spot, you know, because sometimes I have to wait 10 minutes at Tesco's to get a wheelchair spot to set my chair up.
And then
people will come in and they'll walk in the car normally, and I think, well, you could have took...
Yeah, so whether there should be wheelchair spaces disabled.
So there's just some purposely for wheelchairs.
Yeah.
I don't know how you'd put that across, but that's I've been thinking that recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. He's put it out there.
Yeah.
Somebody, Tesco's.
And
they're talking to someone, the person pushing the chair. I mean, that must be unbelievably frustrating.
Yeah, I got that very early on. But I can relate to that. I watched a film actually which had that highlighted. And there's a new film out with Kevin Hart called Upside. And they highlight that fact of him doing that. Yeah.
Must be. I mean, hopefully you're a confident enough guy to kind of call people out on it, but demand the attention.
And they do. I mean, I've had it before. I was going around Tesco's and actually a lady what knew me, she said, oh, what are you doing in here? I said, I'm getting some shopping. She said, yeah, but you're on your own. And I was like, well, I'm quite capable of being a woman. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure. But then that was the more she was saying, the worse I was getting.
She didn't mean it,
you know, but it's just... Some people think funny.
How would you do shopping though? Do you put it on your knee? If you
could film me coming through Tesco, it depends what I got. But I've come through and I've got the bag in my mouth and I've got it everywhere. However I can, actually, yeah.
And then you forget something.
But I think with anything with a disability or sort of being in a wheelchair, it's kind of planning. So now I have the children every Wednesday from school. I pick them up from school. We go for dinner and have all them. So now I probably will go to Tesco's and they'll carry the bags. So I just plan around it. But if I do have to go, you get the bag wherever you can, really.
Can't even imagine, actually, trying to figure that out. In fact, there's an amazing website for anyone listening, and I've got a lot of parent followers, a Instagrammer called Mums Like Us, who talks about being a parent with disabilities. And her website was talking about things I hadn't even thought about, like trying to carry a baby car seat if you're disabled. I mean, you're at a different stage in parenting, but can you even imagine navigating?
No, sis, and... when you look around, there is some how they do it. I think that's something I kind of thought about when I was in hospital. If we had any more children, you know, how am I going to do that? But I think it's like anything. You kind of just you learn
ways
to do it. Yeah. And I had a stage very early on where, you know, I'd been paralysed a couple of weeks, and I was thinking, well, how am I going to feel when I go out with the lads on a night out, or how am I going to feel here and there? And then I kind of squashed that and just thought, well, why worry about it?
Yeah.
Because I can worry about it for 6 months, go out and it's not a problem.
Yeah.
So I've worried for 6 months.
So often in life, worrying about it is worse than the reality.
Is, yeah, and that's my advice to anybody who's kind of newly paralysed and things. Don't shy away from things. Just, like you said, because you can think about it, you can worry about it. Just do it.
Yeah.
If you have a few hiccups, then kind of they're hiccups. And then next time, you know where you went wrong.
And as you say, you can't change it.
You can't change it. No, you can't. It is what it is. And that's how I've dealt with it. I think very early on, I just thought, right, the worst, right, you're in a wheelchair. That's the worst case scenario. Just get your head around that and then try and make the best of it. And that's why I've been so good. you can't go through life worrying.
No.
I think, because then you don't end up living one. You've got to just do what makes you happy. And that I think, you know, I listened to a couple of your podcasts on the way up here, and, you know, the one about weight and the one about the no alcohol and stuff. And I think whatever topic you're on about, the main goal at the end of it is just doing what makes you happy. Yeah. You know,
but why do we find that so hard?
I don't know. And it is pressure on people to be the way
appearances.
They are. Yeah, and sometimes, like, I, you know, Instagram for me has been an amazing tool.
I was going to ask you that.
And it is an amazing tool.
It is.
But you can see how some people get a negative way of feeling like they've got to be away, you know, because Instagram is a highlight reel.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, that is the trailer to a movie.
Yeah.
What goes on behind them, people don't
like,
see.
Oh, I didn't know you were doing that. I was like, well, yeah, you've seen 1 minute of a day.
Yeah. And actually, the thing is that I think that's what people kind of bought into my Instagram quite, because I was documenting every day. You know, if I went through hospital and I pooed myself or I wet myself, I was putting it on there. So it was honest and people related to it, because this is like, this guy isn't holding anything back.
Yeah.
And that's actually why people feel so comfortable to send me a message, because I do give them an honest answer, whether it's about anything. So it is good, but I can see that some people could buy into it badly, yeah.
So, three quick last things. Where can people find you? What's your Instagram handle?
It's Tano_HG, so TANO_HG.
And is there anything you want to shout about?
No, not really, just be happy. You know, if something's not making you happy, change it. That's the best advice I can give you.
So it's amazing advice. And as you know, the podcast is all about being honest. If you could have one honest conversation, it could be with a troll, a celeb, a friend, a younger version of yourself, what would it be?
If I could sit down with anyone for an hour, it would be my granddad.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is he still alive?
He's not now. And I used to see him a lot, and he was a remarkable man. I think if I just sit down and speak to him, that would be great. Now with my granddad.
Oh, that's a nice thought, isn't it? And then I'm always aware that my guests have a long time of being really honest, and I just sit here and nod and don't have to be honest at all. So I've added a silly bit where it's time for me to be honest. I have realised that increasingly I don't bother to wear makeup anymore, and I can't decide whether that makes me really empowered or that I've let my standard slip. What's the answer to that question?
Empowered, I think.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think if you're comfortable without makeup on,
then that's not a bad thing. How it happens, and then bit by bit you wear like an elasticated trouser, and then...
Then is that a bad thing?
Oh, I know. It's so hard to know, isn't it? It's the same as we're talking about the body image stuff. It's like, is it good to relax it?
If you're comfortable within yourself, I think the happier you can be in your own bubble and exclude everybody else's opinions, then the better you're going to be. So if you want to
think that,
I genuinely do. Yeah, like, you can inspire others and stuff like that, but don't let other people control you. I don't think, you know, you are you.
Yeah, it's true. Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. Thank you, Ben.
Thank you
for being so honest with me and educating me a lot. And thank you everybody for listening to Honestly Podcast. Please rate, review, subscribe, and tell your mates all about it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Honestly Podcast with me, Clemmie Telford. As ever, I am so grateful to our sponsors, Marks & Spencers, for working to enable me to have such important and honest conversations. If you found this week's episode interesting, which I hope you did, I'd love to know your thoughts. So please do give me a rating or review, and even better, hit the subscribe button. That way you'll get each week's episode delivered straight to you. Oh, and one final thought. I'm always looking for inspiration for new subjects. So if you've got any topics that you'd like me to cover that I haven't done already, please do send your suggestions my way. You can either leave a comment below on iTunes or hop over to Instagram and send me a DM, and I'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much.